FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it's Halloween. Time for a little good humor. Hey, if you haven't gone out and bought the candy yet, just give them money. They'd rather have the money. I know when I was collecting for Halloween, I was kind of split, but I never turned away money. So if you don't want to bother with the candy because you don't want it around, because if you're like me, you're going to eat the stuff, and that's the last thing you need, both for your health and your sanity, just give them coins. And hey, as always, if you want to contribute, kl@kerrylutz.com. That's the email address, and we answer all. I'm a couple dozen behind right now. Just getting ready to go away to Hawaii to Jason Hartman's event. I can't wait. I haven't been to Hawaii in 30 years, and I will be doing shows, although a slightly lesser schedule from there, but we will be in touch. Hey, so a lot of interesting things, bad things, good things happening. You know about the synagogue shooting in, just a shocking thing, really shocking, but in Pittsburgh. And this could happen anywhere at any time. It doesn't matter what your religion is. Don't think those people got chosen just because of their religion. Maybe it was a false flag attack. Maybe it wasn't. I'm not prepared to comment upon that. And I don't think it's really appropriate at this matter. Shouldn't be being used for political advantage either. That is heinous and that is disgusting. And you know who I'm talking about. I don't need to name them by name, but it's really awful. And the news shouldn't be attributing responsibility for this. This is a wacko. Maybe he was manipulated by somebody, maybe not. He seems like pretty much a nut job. Let's leave it at that. But what do you do when you're in that situation? How do you avoid being in that situation? And how the hell do you get out of there if the shots start flying? And can you defend yourself? Is there any point in preparing for it? Hey, well, our expert, who we've talked with and you've heard from numerous times about numerous such events, George Mathias Jr., moderncombativesystems.net. George, welcome back.
Hey, Kerry, how are you? Thanks for having me.
As always, so when we look at these situations, it's impossible to really plan totally for a situation. You can prepare and you can make plans, but in all likelihood, the situation that confronts you is going to be completely different than the situation you're prepared for. Does preparation still make sense in that instance?
It does, Kerry. What we have to do, we have to look at, working off of time-honored principles for personal protection and preparedness, and not just saying, well, you know, I know we do. When we typically talk about active shooters, the first thing comes to mind is, you know, God forbid, the kids in the school, in college. And then, you know, thank God, to a much lesser extent, we have it actually in our churches. But I believe it was last month, we had an active shooter situation in Aberdeen, Maryland, at the Rite Aid plant. And I'm actually retired from, Aberdeen Police Department. So my SWAT team that I was on actually, you know, responded down there. But of course, by the time they get down there, the shooting is over and they're looking for the shooter. So between the time of, you know, the actual first inkling of violence and the time the police get there is a long time. We know about the shooting that occurred in Pittsburgh. We know that he came out and engaged two officers. but the chances are, you know, depending on where the location is and all these things, it's nice if it's a well-known building like, you know, a synagogue or a school. But this can happen in, you know, any place of business. A lot of the times it's domestic related or it has something to do with workplace violence. So it's not about, you know, where this could happen. It's about preparing yourself for the event that any act of violence takes place, whether it's the guy coming in with a machete or, you know, it's a guy coming in, you know, with a gun. We just need to prepare ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, I hate to use cliches on this show. If you listen to the show, you know it, but better to have a gun and not need it than to need a gun and not have it. A little bit of training goes a long way. I mean, but for your average person here, George, you practiced for this. You did drills. You are constantly honing your skills. The average person is just not going to have that ability or opportunity to prepare. So what is the best way? What are three things you can do if you're in one of these situations?
All right. Well, the first thing we want to do is we want to get out of the box, you know, or, you know, better known as the killing field. When these things take places, they're going to take place in a box. And a box can be everything from a boardroom, you know, up until including something the size of, you know, a Rite Aid warehouse or a huge mega church. And they're just made up of bigger boxes attached to smaller boxes. So we talk about whenever you enter a space, anything that has, you know, four walls and, you know, doors and windows or no windows, you need to view all doors and windows as not only an entrance, but also an exit. Okay. Mm-hmm. People have a real bad habit, and this has cost people their lives in places like concerts and, you know, other places, is that when you walk in the front door of a venue, don't think about leaving the same way. Mm-hmm. As soon as you walk in, you want to locate another exit. And if you have the opportunity to, you want to check and see where that exit goes to. Years ago, I went to a concert with my daughter. Security was very, very shoddy. I went in. She and I both had a flashlight, of course, because we're in a place where it's dark and mm-hmm. it's nighttime. And so I go up and tell, you know, say hello to the bouncer. And there was an exit by the stage. And I asked him where it went to. And he told me it went to where we parked. So I signaled to my daughter my flashlight. She signaled me back. And she knew that in the case of any emergency, that mm-hmm. everybody else in the crowd was going to be going for the entrance that we came in. She was to feel her way to the wall, feel her way down, come to me, and we made the exit out the opposite way of everybody else.
Hey, and that is such a great point. And it's not just for active shooter situations. It's anything. Look, when I go to a movie theater, I always look for the exits. And I have no idea why I'm going to need it, if I'm ever going to. It's almost certain you're not going to need it. But when you know where the emergency exits are and you know your quickest way to get out of there, when everyone else panics, you're in a situation where you've already got your exit plan. And same thing on an airplane. I look for the closest emergency exit. I know there's almost no chance I'm ever going to need it. It's virtually, you know, it's so safe on airplanes nowadays, but there's still a possibility something could happen, whatever. And so when you're in a public situation, you always need your exit plan, right?
That's it. That's exactly the truth. And something that, you know, people also don't take into consideration all the time. When we're at work, when we're at school, we're really only responsible for ourselves. When you go to church, you go to other places, you're probably going to have people with you, family, friends, and anybody that has a lower training or less training than you are is a, you know, they're a detriment to you at that point. They're a liability. And anybody who has training up or over the top of what you have is an asset. And so kids aren't going to be able to move as fast as us. Our parents aren't going to be able to move as fast as us. So you got to decide at that time, you're not, you know, this lone survivor. You're actually a team leader. And those people have to be ready to do what you tell them to do. And when they grab a hold of you, go in the direction that you're going without question.
Mm-hmm. So you have to, that's got to be part of your plan, is that other people are less prepared than you, less knowledgeable. And the other thing we didn't talk about, George, is the more you plan psychologically and physically, the less likely you are to panic when the moment comes, correct?
Well, that's true. People are not going to, you know, rise to the situation. They're going to default to their level of training. You know, professionally, we always try to develop a mindset of not if, but when, then thinking, when this happens, this is what I'm going to do. I currently run security at Freedom Biker Church in York. An average Sunday, probably about 160 people right now. We're growing and growing. But we have not only a medical team, but we also have our security team so that we can take care of these situations that arise. And you're going to get a good indication of how people are going to react to any kind of a chaotic situation with your typical medical emergency. Somebody falls out, somebody passes out. You're going to see a bunch of people try to flock around. You're going to see how things are going to get congested and how everybody kind of fixates on what's going on. It's important that, you know, to realize that these people that do these evil against other people, they're not machines. There's likely going to be some sort of a, you know, some sort of a ruckus, yelling and screaming. And in today's culture, everybody for some reason wants to get it on YouTube and everybody wants to fixate and stand still. You know, when somebody walks into a restaurant that you're in or an office space and they start raising their voice, that's time for you to create, you know, time and distance and physical barriers, and don't stick around to see what's going to happen, how it's going to escalate. If that's not, you know, in your job description, you have no responsibility to do that. And again, you remove yourself from the situation, and then, you know, there's no part for you to play in it.
Hey, it's so true. And you're so spot on. Hey, looking at a couple of these tragedies that have occurred recently, I don't think we talked about Parkland, the school, since that happened. I don't think I've spoken with you after that.
Right.
But talk about people who are trained to be paid and trained to be ready for these situations and have not a clue how to handle it. I mean, this is the worst situation I've ever seen.
Well, you know, Kerry, being a retired officer, I have to be critical when being critical, you know, is called for. And the truth of the matter is, any cop that's listening to this knows how much he's going to get into in a particular shift, how much, you know, activity he's going to go out there and look for, depending on who he's working with that particular shift. The case of the matter is that not in all circumstances, but enough, the school resource officers are put out there sometimes because, you know, they're getting a little old.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they want somewhere to put people. And that is not the place for that because they're actually, you know, they're really watching over a flock. They're watching over all these school kids and, you know, the entire administration. And doing physical security is not something that really comes easy to police officers. You know, it's a mobile force, and now you're expecting them to, you know, take care of, you know, this school campus, and he's by himself, you know, until, you know, other people show up, and heaven forbid, you know, he's the first one to be engaged and he's, you know, killed or wounded during the initial attack. It's going to be a while before more police get in there. So the school resource officer, I think, is seen way too much as, you know, officer friendly, and he needs to be trained to be, you know, to be violent when the situation requires violence. And he needs to be a highly trained officer with surgical shooting skills, which are by far, you know, not the case with the majority of officers, unless you, you know, you're on some kind of a special operations team, to make those critical decisions and be a lone, you know, be a lone operator, because he's going to have to hold down the fort until the rest of the troops get there.
Very true. Very true. And you just saw so many things that weren't right. I don't know if you studied the Promise program, which basically was Obama and Eric Holder's thing to cut back on the number of minority expulsions and criminal prosecutions that
yes.
result from the school. I mean, how big a factor was that?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is that we're taking kids that should not be with the other kids trying to get their education. And they showed us that based on, you know, their previous actions. And we had the same thing early on in my career. My first civilian law enforcement job was with Baltimore City School Police. And we would have no knowledge if a kid got up, locked up for an armed robbery. You know, 14, 15-year-old kid gets up locked up for an armed robbery on Sunday night, and he does get out of jail, and he's back in school on Monday, and nobody knows anything about it. Hmm. There needs to be some serious communication between these kids that are walking around the halls. We're not talking about kids bullying other kids and picking on them,
yeah,
you know, because of the way we're dressed. We're talking about predators.
Of course. I totally got you there. And just awful situation. 45 times the police were called out. We don't even know how many, because half of them, I'm sure, never got reported. But dozens of times, two tips to the FBI hotline, and so much more. And yet, what to me it shows is you can't rely upon the government to keep you safe. If you're lucky,
absolutely,
they might be there, but you have to count on them not being there, because a lot of people have wound up dead thinking that, hey, first responders will take care of it. You know, the old saying, and I'm sure you've heard it, is, hey, when seconds count, the police are minutes away, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very, very pro Second Amendment, and
same
everybody
here
that can be legally armed should be suitably armed. But if I had one thing I could tell everybody to go out and do, it wouldn't be to go buy a gun. It would be just get on YouTube and look up Stop the Bleed, how to stop massive hemorrhaging. Mm-hmm. Because what I always think of is there's all these people that, you know, because whatever their belief system or whatever the case may not be able or may not be interested in carrying a firearm, but I don't know anybody that wouldn't want to be able to perform first aid on somebody who's just been shot and is hemorrhaging. Stopping the bleed, that is the thing that is killing these people. And mm-hmm. we need to, again, it's not just personal protection. It's also for personal preparedness, having those first aid skills. The gun is all part of it, but it is not the foundation.
No, and in a place like Vegas, with that sniper, it wouldn't have done you any good whatsoever. Pointless. Not that they would have let you into a concert with it, because you are wanded and screened before you can go in. But the point is, if you had the survival skills in place, a sniper shooting at a theater, what do you do there?
Well, the thing is, you want to understand the difference between cover and concealment. Cover will stop a bullet. Concealment will just not allow the shooter to see you. And in most cases, people will not shoot at what they can't see. So, you know, I have not been to Vegas out there in that area since that happened, but I'm sure there was plenty of concealment, you know, once you got out of the, you know, the middle of the killing zone and got more towards the stage and all that kind of stuff. But you need to be moving. You need to absolutely be moving.
Yeah, moving
is the key to survival.
Moving targets a lot harder to hit than a stationary target. And we're not going to even get into the cover-up or anything else that's taken place on there. It doesn't matter at this point. Not going to help the people who perished there. But the lessons that you can take away from it that will perhaps save you in a similar encounter is really far more important. So stay moving, stay low, minimize your silhouette, if you will, your target. So you want to get down, you want to be, if you can figure out where the bullets are coming from, you want as low a profile as you can possibly get in that situation, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's what, you know, people have to understand. You know, I've seen plenty of people. There's a theory about running in a zigzag pattern. Mm-hmm. When you're running for your life, that really doesn't enter into your head. You're trying to run without falling, especially if you're dragging your wife or kids or somebody behind you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, the zigzag pattern, they said, works when you're running away from an alligator. And I've heard that that doesn't work. But yeah, so the first thing, though, is hit the deck, right? Hit the deck.
Well, you know, as soon as if you can get to cover, mm-hmm. you know, you want to get to cover and concealment, but no matter what, just keep moving and moving.
Yeah.
I mean, until you have something to stand behind, don't mm-hmm. stop.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. Makes total sense. Hey, George, I know you're doing work with dogs now, a lot of other things. Just tell us where we find you these days and check out your work, maybe get some classes with you.
Okay, the two best places to go, you can go to mcsdogtraining.net or you can just check out Modern Kubota Systems blog. And that, I just wrote an article actually on the Pittsburgh shooting, and there's some thoughts to ponder on there. If you or your church is interested in putting together your own security team or revamping the one that's currently in place.
All right. Hey, it makes total sense. Thank you so much, George. Hey, again, be part of the show. Email us, kl@carrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. George, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Carrie. I really appreciate it.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.